Can you all hear me? All right, good. So today I'm going to be talking about something that most people probably wouldn't expect to hear about on a Sunday morning. Today we're going to be discussing dinosaurs, as you can see. In this day and age, we are daily presented with a vision of the world that is very different from what the Bible describes in the book of Genesis. This story we are presented with from all corners of society, whether it be entertainment or the schools we attend. It's something that we really can't shield ourselves for, and we can't protect our children from it either. So then rather than try to hide away from it, I think it is best to just confront it head on. We need to be able to show people that having faith in the Bible is a trust that is not blind. It is a reasonable one. And so, I want to address dinosaurs. Now, the question we often have about them is, do dinosaurs prove evolution? What does the Bible say about them, if anything? What do we know about fossils, artifacts, and the most interesting thing at the bottom, I think, is soft tissue. Now, I imagine most people here have seen at least one of the movies related to this photo. Dinosaurs are some of the most fantastical creatures to ever walk the earth. They tend to capture the imaginations of children and adults alike. Unfortunately, they are almost always described as creatures that went extinct about 65 million years ago and roamed the earth before humans ever even existed. Now, this idea, as I already mentioned, comes from everywhere in society. You could just go to a museum and you could be reading a little slide about birds, and they will tell you that birds evolved from dinosaurs over many millions of years. And that's exactly what comes to mind when most people think about dinosaurs. There are plenty of times I have talked to children about dinosaurs, and it doesn't take long before you realize that they have already accepted that the Earth is millions of years old, even if the 7-year-old doesn't have the slightest idea what the word evolution means. This here is the story of evolution. The secular tale starts at about 13.7 billion years ago, where the universe, for no particular reason, just exploded and started expanding millions of times faster than the speed of light, for no particular reason. Gravity started operating in reverse for no particular reason, and then, without any discernible reason, it stopped moving at that speed. Gravity started working normal again, and it just started expanding more slowly. Then, after that, we have eventually the Earth forming and cooling off, with life originating from non-living chemicals. A single cell went on to evolve into every single living thing on Earth. And, of course, most evolutionists today would tell you that dinosaurs evolved into birds. Dinosaurs have been firmly fitted into this narrative, and it makes it easy for children who love dinosaurs to accept the rest of this story. Then we look at the biblical timeline. We see the 6 days of creation, with all land animals being created on day 6. This would naturally include dinosaurs. Then we have the fall, and about 1.5 years later, there's a global flood. Then, after that, we have the separation at the Tower of Babel, where the nations form as they are divided up according to new languages. When you say that you're a Christian, what does it mean? It means that you believe the gospel. It means that you believe the Word of God. The Bible should be our rule of faith in every subject. We can't pick and choose which parts of the Bible we're going to believe. You see, the Bible is not just a book about spiritual matters, but it's also a record of history. If it was just a book about the spiritual subjects, then what would it mean for Jesus Christ to have risen from the dead? You see, the message of Christ as Savior has no meaning if the Bible does not describe actual historical events. And if we can't trust the Bible when it says, when it talks about earthly things, how can we trust the Bible when it talks about matters of the Spirit and our fate after death? You see, while dinosaurs, more than any other tool, have been used to promote the theory of evolution and the idea of deep time, the people at CMI prefer to call dinosaurs missionary lizards, because we believe that when we start with the Word of God, dinosaurs fit much better than they do with the evolutionary story of deep time. This tale that has been used to promote evolution can instead be used to introduce people to the gospel by showing them that the Bible is the true history of the earth. And I can testify to this on a personal level. You see, I was homeschooled until high school. And in my first 2 years of high school was when I had my serious introduction to the theory of evolution. And for the first time, it was not presented to me as just some goofy science fiction idea, like it was in the movies that I watched. This is the first time I had seen anyone try to connect it to physical reality. To say the least, my faith was shipwrecked. I had 1 foot out of the church door at this point, and someone who was aware of my difficulties sent me an interesting article where I discovered some information about dinosaurs that changed everything. It didn't just bring me back from the brink, but it gave me a passion that has changed the direction of my life. So, I think we need to go on to think biblically about dinosaurs. What day were dinosaurs created on? Well, as I already mentioned, they were created on day 6, when all the land animals were made. Now, first, I think we should discuss something that most people don't know about paleontology. Paleontology is the study of fossils. Now, unlike most fields of science, paleontology does not actually adhere to the standards of the scientific method. It's what one calls soft science, or more accurately, evolutionary storytelling. Much of their claims cannot be verified using the scientific method and involves a large degree of guesswork. So next, I want to ask, what do you think dinosaurs ate? It had teeth up to 6 inches long. Now, how would this dinosaur have eaten originally? Anyone want to take guesses? Because in the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 30, it says that every beast of the earth ate green plants for food. Now, this is kind of a hard thing to imagine with a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but God created everything and called it very good. A world full of carnivorism, cannibalism, and predatory behavior is not a good world. Obviously, when these things began, it would have been after the fall. Now, I think a beautiful example that explains how this could be the case is bears. Now, despite the appearance of many animals that seem to be designed to be predators, many of them don't really rely on eating very much. Sometimes, not at all. If memory serves, there's even one species of piranha that's completely vegetarian. Kind of betrays their reputation, doesn't it? See, although all bears have very sharp and frightening teeth and large, powerful claws that would make you think they're made to kill animals and eat meat, for the most part, bears usually subsist largely on a vegetarian diet. For some bears, it's virtually exclusively vegetarian. And then some eat almost only meat. The most extreme example of a meat eater would be the polar bears, because the environments they live on aren't exactly rich in vegetation. Other animals, such as the giant panda, well, they eat virtually nothing but bamboo. But I want you to take a look at the skulls of all of these creatures. Notice that the polar bear and the giant panda have very similar teeth. Now, it's not hard to realize how a giant panda, if it so choose, could easily use those teeth that it uses to strip down bamboo to tear apart other animals. You see, this is something called exaptation. Unlike adaptation, exaptation is when an animal takes features it already has and uses them in ways that it didn't previously. Just like piranhas that eat meat, before they would use it for something else. Just like the bears, use mostly their teeth and claws to strip material off of rough plants. Now, if dinosaurs were created to eat plants and some later on ate meat, what evidence would show that so many dinosaurs ate meat and then later changed to carnivory? An interesting example we have here are exceptionally preserved fossils. They found teeth marks on some bone fossils that convinced them that some dinosaur species were cannibalistic. The fossils provide evidence of animals attacking and eating other animals. Now, the example with this specific dinosaur is just teeth marks on bone fossils, which doesn't necessarily prove that they ate each other, just that they were violently attacking one another. A more gruesome example is a T-Rex tooth inside of a hadrosaur's tailbone. Now, as you can see, this T-Rex tooth is rather deeply embedded in that tailbone. It also means that this poor dinosaur survived the experience and lived the rest of its life with that giant bone stuck in its spine. Certainly a hard thing to live with. Once again, this does not show carnivory, but it does show that dinosaurs were behaving very violently after the fall. Now, this is usually where we find the evidence of what it is they ate. This is fossilized feces. When we examine these specimens, we can determine what it is that the dinosaurs ate. We have not only found that the dinosaurs ate meat, but they also eat something that most people didn't even think existed at the time dinosaurs were around. Now, this was grass. Most evolutionists claimed that grass only evolved about 10 million years after all dinosaurs had gone extinct. So the evolutionary timeline, this is another instance where it just doesn't really fit the evidence. Of course, one of the frustrations with the evolutionary model is that it's so plastic that it can be altered to accommodate almost anything. Now, I'm going to say almost because things get a little bit messier here going forward. You see, in a 2005 article in New Scientist, they stated that depicting dinosaurs munching on grass was considered by experts to be as ridiculous as showing prehistoric humans hunting dinosaurs with spears. That's some pretty strong language, but they were proven wrong. You think they might be proven wrong about the second one? Ever since then, they have found a lot more things. They found that titanosaurs in India ate grass. Bamboo was found in Myanmar, which dated back to twice as old as they say the dinosaurs died out. And they even found a flowering grass that produces small berries from China. They found it in the teeth of a duck-billed dinosaur. Now, all of these things are far older than what the previous evolutionary claims meant. In the last 8 years, the evolutionary story of the origin of grass has been thrown out multiple times, casting a lot of doubt in the ages that they keep assigning to things. You see, as they keep looking at the fossil record, they have to constantly expand fossil succession because they continuously find that what they told you about when what evolved where is just wrong. Much of what we're taught in schools and libraries about dinosaurs is very commonly proved wrong. These false claims give people a mental image of a land before time that was very alien to the world humans live in. Yet the more we study and discover, the more we realize that the age of dinosaurs was not particularly different from the world today. There just aren't dinosaurs around anymore. That's the most notable difference. Now, one of the things that often surprises people is that they were given this fanciful image once upon a time that dinosaurs and birds did not live alongside each other, but that as dinosaurs slowly went extinct, what did survive slowly changed into primitive varieties of birds that eventually became modern birds. Now, this is a fun case. Sorry, I thought someone said something. This is a fun case of exceptional preservation because you usually don't find stomachs that are fossilized, let alone ones that still have their contents in them. You see, this interesting dinosaur managed to consume three birds, which is funny because birds with their hollow bones usually don't last very long in a stomach. This suggests that this creature was fossilized well before the stomach acid could finish eating away the bones. Now, we have a couple examples here. One of them is a Cephusiornis. Now, notice the evolutionary dates. Here we have dinosaurs that eat birds, a beaked, fully flight-capable bird, which was dated more than twice the time since evolutionists say dinosaurs died out. So not only did birds already exist at the time, but they existed, apparently, tens of millions of years earlier than they were supposed to have come into existence. And for all intents and purposes, they were just like modern birds. Now, this is a full specimen here. You can see the entire skeleton found at once of the creature that had eaten those three birds. That's quite the last meal. Of course, when it was discovered that birds existed at the same time as dinosaurs, the evolutionary model was once again plastic enough to accommodate this too. They just keep tying themselves in knots. They did not abandon the story, but changed it once again. They claimed that the birds that already existed long before dinosaur extinction were part of an evolutionary side branch, and that they were not actually the ancestors of modern birds, but that those ones went extinct, and modern birds then evolved from dinosaurs. Another interesting thing is that we can see that dinosaurs also ate mammals. There are three mammals' jaws in this one's gut, and this fossil is dated to about 124 to 122 million years old. We also know that mammals ate dinosaurs. We have examples of small dinosaurs being consumed by various mammals. This isn't a particularly large mammal, but this is certainly not the thing I would want to find eating out of my cat's food bowl. So what we see is that dinosaurs did not walk alone. When dinosaurs were around, there were mammals, there were birds. The dinosaurs ate birds. Birds ate some dinosaurs. Dinosaurs ate mammals, and some mammals ate the dinosaurs. This leaves a rather confused picture of the great age of dinosaurs, because it makes it seem like there really wasn't that much special about it, aside from there also being dinosaurs. Now, this is one of the most fascinating cases of rapid fossilization. Here, what we see circled is actually a fossilized example of dinosaurs and animals attacking each other and fighting to the death before they were buried and fossilized. Now, obviously, in order for this to have occurred, these creatures must have been buried alive and were killed, crushed under something rather quickly, and it did so in a manner that did not change the position of the dinosaurs very much. Of course, this is not even the most exquisite example. Now, here we have a fun case that shows bird eating mammals too at the time. This one has a mammal's paw in its guts, dated to 125 to 120 million years ago. Notice that this example, too, is a bird that was around roughly 65 million years before the dinosaurs supposedly went extinct and started evolving into modern birds. Every one of these examples dates back twice as old from the time evolutionists say that dinosaurs went extinct and evolved into birds. Yet, when was the last time you went to a secular museum and saw all these creatures together on a display? Can't say I ever have, and I think the reason why is because it doesn't fit with the stereotypical image that people have of an age of dinosaurs. When you look at all these things, what seems like this great ancient age before man really wasn't that different at all. Now, is there evidence that suggests that most dinosaur fossils are the result of a big flood? I would say yes. Now, this is a very common depiction that you can find in old science textbooks, maybe in even some of the newer ones. This is the common story we are given about how fossils form. A dinosaur dies, the body slowly rots, it's covered in water, and that water helps to slowly mineralize it as it's covered over in sediments. Of course, this common idea is not one that fits the evidence very well at all. Fossils can form very quickly, and usually do so under catastrophic conditions, not slow, gradual ones like this. For starters, whether it be in water or on land, if a dinosaur's corpse is exposed above ground for very long, or just about any other animal, they are quickly torn apart by every little bug and scavenger you can find. It does not take very long at all before the skeleton becomes completely disarticulated. Yet many dinosaur skeletons are very complete. This is another example we have here of a Protoceratops and a Velociraptor fossilized in a fight to the death. Here you can see the Velociraptor has embedded its deadly foot claw into the neck of its victim, which is near the region that housed the blood supply for the head. In turn, the Protoceratops appears to have bitten and broken the right arm of the Velociraptor, whose left hand grips the head of the Protoceratops. This Velociraptor is not having a very easy time getting his last meal. This is an artistic reconstruction of what was happening at the time of their death and burial. Now, what would we expect to see if there was a worldwide flood? We would expect to see fossils of dead things all over the earth that show evidence of them being buried in watery conditions and fossilized rather rapidly before much tissue could decay away. Now, this is an interesting example that are actually found all over the earth. These are mass graveyards of dinosaurs all buried together. The skeletons are often fairly complete, and you find well over 1,000 of these skeletons all buried together. Not just of dinosaurs, but also in this sedimentary layer, you will find a large number of fish and various other sea life. Now, you can find more than 24 of these bone beds in Canada. One of them measures just under a full square mile that contains hundreds of Centrosaurus dinosaurs all tumbled together. They're found mixed in with the marine life, as already mentioned, but the secular explanation is that a local flood caused this. But these are huge creatures mixed in with fish and sea life, and these bone beds are not close to the ocean. Whatever flood could have caused such a large, mass burial site of bones was obviously not the kind of flooding that we observe today. Now, we find these dinosaur bone beds in, like I mentioned, Alberta, Canada. Now, the Centrosaurus was a cow-sized plant-eating dinosaur. And this contains somewhere in the region of low thousands. The idea was that this was a catastrophic tropical storm somewhere about 76 million years ago. They interpreted the vast coastal landscape as being submerged during tropical storms or hurricanes. I think we can easily see another alternative explanation that would explain why there are so many mass graves like this all over the world. Now, another interesting thing we see in long-necked dinosaurs is the stereotypical dinosaur death pose. They have this backward arching neck, body, and tail. Now, it's taken a long time to try to explain why so many of the well-articulated dinosaur skeletons are found in this pose. So what they did is they took some examples of other long-necked animals, such as ostriches and chickens. They placed them in cold, fresh water, and after they drowned, within a few seconds, the necks arched backwards, and their heads were thrown back. Now, while there is many roads to this pose, the simplest and most common one is immersion in water. You see, these chickens and other long-necked creatures have a strong elastic ligament in their neck that helps them hold their head up, because the muscles alone would have a very hard time doing this all day long, every day. You see, when the animal dies, though, all the muscles go limp, and this ligament on its own is not strong enough to hold up the head on land. But when it's immersed in water, there is much less tension. And this decrease in tension makes it so that the muscles are no longer holding the head up, but the ligament is still pulling the head back. And that's why it gets its head thrown back. When they cut the ligament in the neck, well, the neck went limp. Just read that. Now, this is another fun example. It's the nodosaur. Now, the nodosaur is one of the common armored dinosaurs. Now, what we're looking at here is a fantastic example of preservation. Now, if you look at the brown spots on the screen, there are a lot of people who think that those fossilized spots are actually melanin, fossilized melanin. That's what gives them the coloration in their skin. This three-dimensional fossil nodosaur is probably one of the best examples I've ever seen. Now, these creatures, unlike the long-necked dinosaurs, are not found in that special pose, but they are often found in another very odd pose that suggests they were probably buried while they were in water. About 70% of them are found in this pose, and what it is that they are found top-heavy. They are fossilized upside down. Well, the reason for that is, well, obviously, all that heavy armor on the back is going to make it a lot heavier on top than it is on bottom. So when they drown, they're going to flip over. Now, one of the common explanations for why this happened was the idea that after they drowned... Oh, I'm moving faster than this. Is that the creatures would sink under the water and then would begin to bloat as their body fills up with gases and decay, then they would float to the surface. And the issue with this idea, though, is that things that do this bloat and float tend to become heavily disarticulated as animals swim up to where it is and start feeding on it at the surface of water. Then, when the body cavity bursts open and the gases come out, it falls down to the bottom of the ocean, and all the bottom feeders will tear the skeleton apart, even eating the bones. The fact that this is so well preserved and that shows that this creature was buried long before it ever did this bloat and float, likely before it ever even had the opportunity. Now, let's see. Evolutionists often will ask this question. If dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time, then why don't we ever find dinosaurs and humans buried in the same fossil layers? Now, when they ask this question, it makes me think that they don't really know very much about their own story. Because this is a beautiful example of why we wouldn't even expect to see it. Now, the coelacanth is a beautiful example of a bony fish that was originally believed to have gone extinct 65 million years ago, about the same time as the dinosaurs. The reason for this is that they never actually found fossils of this fish in any layers believed to be younger than that. Yet, not too long ago, it was discovered that the coelacanth is actually alive and swimming around off the coast of Africa right now. So, I think we can say rather confidently that the lack of fossils is not evidence that there was a lack of something there. Another beautiful example is a lizard called the tuatara. It was believed to have gone extinct about 135 million years ago because for the last 135 years on the evolutionary timeline, not a single fossil of this animal has ever been found. Yet, they're actually also around today. So I think we can confidently say that the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Aside from just being a logical fallacy, we continuously see examples in the fossil record that show that this kind of thinking is absurd. All right. So let's start trying to see dinosaurs through the lenses of biblical glasses. Now, what we have here is that in Genesis 1:25, it said that God made the animals according to their kinds. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image." What is the conclusion here? Oops. Dinosaurs were created on the sixth day. Dinosaurs and man lived together. The objections that people make to this, based off the fossil record, as previously shown, just don't really hold up to scrutiny. This is what the biblical picture would show us. Now, something a lot of people like to ask is that if dinosaurs and humans lived at the same time, surely we would expect there to be something in the historical records or even the Bible that would mention these creatures. So, does the Bible say anything about dinosaurs? Well, not by name, because the dinosaur is a word that was coined in 1841. And most translations of the Bible were made long before that. So, I don't really see why you would expect to find the word dinosaur in the Bible. But, I would say that there are some things mentioned in the Bible that, if you pay attention, really do sound a lot like a dinosaur. And this is probably the most famous example. We can look at Behemoth. The Bible says that he made along with you, and which feeds on grass like an ox. What strength is in his loins? What power in the muscles of his belly? His tail moves like a cedar. His sinews and thighs are close-knit. His bones are like tubes of bronze. His limbs like rods of iron. He ranks first among the works of God. Now, this is a commonplace sauropod or long-necked dinosaur. Now, I think what's funny is that, remember, originally, evolutionists believed that grass evolved tens of millions of years after dinosaurs went extinct. Yet when the Bible is describing a creature that seems suspiciously like a sauropod, it says that it fed on grass. So if this is a sauropod, it seems that the Bible was quite ahead of the paleontologists. Now, let's take a look at a cedar tree. Now, as you can see, that is a pretty big tree. Now, there are a lot of people who have tried to find alternative explanations of what the behemoth might have been. Now, some of the things they proposed have been creatures like the elephant or the hippopotamus. Now, I think it'll be pretty easy to identify the problem with that thinking. The most extreme one is probably this. Does this seem like accurate depictions of either of those animals? I cannot really think of any animal in the world that fits this description better than a sauropod. I mean, just look at this. It's absurd. That's the best they can come up with? It seems most likely that the behemoth was a sauropod dinosaur, but they just didn't call it by that name because those words didn't even exist at the time. When was Job written? That book was written after the flood, but it was written not that long after the flood either. Job had knowledge of the flood that happened a few hundred years before his time. He had knowledge of a flood that washed away the wicked. Now, we have reason to believe that dinosaurs did survive the flood, and this is not the only reason. Once again, we need to put on our Bible glasses. Because oftentimes, before the word dinosaur was even invented, people would find these giant reptiles, fossilized in some cases, and they would refer to them as dragons. For example, they found large marine reptiles, fossilized ones, and when they were taken to museums, they were classified as a variety of dragon. Now, I believe the specific example mentioned here is the plesiosaur, which was a massive marine reptile, oftentimes what people think of when they refer to the Loch Ness Monster. And there are some pictures of it. Now, it's funny because if you go to a British museum, you can find that just before, that's what they called them. These large, ferocious reptiles were known as dragons. Now, you wouldn't really refer to a sauropod dinosaur as a dragon because they weren't terrible lizards. They were massive and they were scary, but they weren't exactly trying to eat anyone. Just, you know, don't get underfoot and you'll be fine. Another fun example is this wine vessel. It was photographed and taken on tour in America along with a number of other Chinese archaeological exhibits in 1980. It's currently on display at the Henan Provincial Museum in China. Interestingly, in the earliest Chinese book on this vessel, the animals are described as being in the shape of a dragon. This, of course, was re-translated into a cat, a long-necked feline later on. Now, I think you can tell that that doesn't really look like a cat, does it? But what it does look oddly like is the Camarasaurus, another interesting and specific example of a long-necked dinosaur. Seems right. That doesn't seem quite right, does it? Another fascinating example is this temple in Cambodia. Now, this temple has many easily recognized carvings on it, some of which would be monkeys, water buffalo, parrots, bears, and iguanas. But on this same temple, we also find another very odd carving. Not the kind of thing you would expect to see. Now, can anyone recognize what this creature looks like? Yes, exactly. It has the iconic bony plates on its back. Now, the fun fact is that fossils of stegosaurs have never been found in Cambodia. And a researcher by the name of Vance Nelson stated that a tremendously powerful case can be made that dinosaurs were being depicted here not from bones, but from real-life encounters. A major reason for this is because back when the fossils were found in the 19th century, early reconstructions were grossly inaccurate. Those bony plates were laying flat on the dinosaur's back like a turtle shell. So if these people were basing it off of fossil reconstructions, then once again, it would seem that they were oddly very much ahead of their time, especially in an area where there aren't any fossils of this creature in the first place. Now, here we see some other interesting carvings, a wall carving. This one is possibly a stegosaurus. Let me highlight it for you. Now, what you see there is two spikes that are likely too big to fit on the tail. Rather, the authors proposed the possibility that the two spikes being on either the hip or the shoulders. These two spikes are more massive than any found on other stegosaurs and has two deep grooves on them, unlike Athagomizers, and only exists as a pair. Now, I think just about everybody here can recognize the Mona Lisa. by Leonardo da Vinci. Now, while she might be old, she's certainly not a dinosaur. That would be a rather insulting take. But around 12 years later, Leonardo also made a very different drawing. Now, as you can see, there's quite the collection of animals on it. But if you pay close attention, you will notice something a little bit more interesting that is not like the others. The morphology of this specific little dragon here is very much like a sauropodomorph. It has the long tail, but unique legs that do not form the straight up and down column. And this reptilian creature has a nail or frill that runs down the back of its body and distinct leg bends of prosauropods. It has five claws on its rear foot, which doesn't really fit with the idea of a cat because they usually have five toes on their front paws and four toes on the hind legs. Now, I think this one is probably the most interesting because it's pretty rare to find this kind of stuff inside of a church, even if a cathedral. Now, I think it would be pretty cool to have something like this in our church, but it would be kind of awkward because then it'd be a major tourist attraction, and that could be annoying during services. Now, what we have here on the tomb of Richard, we see that there are easily recognized brass carvings. You can even see a dog with a collar, bird, eel, fish. Anyone want to take a guess at what the more interesting one is? Not just any dinosaur, but it seems like they have a couple sauropod dinosaurs. Now, for many years, artists and scientists drew the Apatosaurus and its relatives with their tails dragging on the ground. But there's no evidence for this idea. There are no tail marks in sauropod trackways. And there was no wear or damage to the tailbones. Also, a 2 or 3 ton tail would have become tangled in plants or caught in cracks in the rocks if it was dragged. The Apatosaurus carried its tail high off the ground, and that provided a lot of balance when it moved. Now, when you look at this, once again, we see the tails very, very high lifted off the ground, very similar to that large cedar tree that was mentioned earlier. This would be the example we're comparing it to. Notice that the one on the left has two spikes at the end of its tail, just like that sauropod there. It'd be rather curious for them to construct this based off of nothing but fossil remnants. Once again, it seems to be the case that this was very much likely something based on experience, or at the very least, descriptions provided by people who had seen them. If the evolutionary story of dinosaurs is true, these creatures should have died out millions of years before human beings ever walked the earth. So how could their images be engraved on a 500-year-old tomb in northern England? It's a good question. Now, earlier I mentioned that an article that I read that completely changed the direction of my life. And it's directly related to dinosaur fossils. You see, a fossil is a word that people often can get confused by, because most people think a fossil is what forms when all the original organic material has decayed away and was replaced by stone, forming a cast of sorts, like a little statue. But not too long ago, a T-Rex leg bone was found, and it got accidentally cracked open. And when they looked inside of it, they found something very interesting. Red blood cells in dinosaur bones. They even found soft, pliable blood vessels and other tissues like collagen. Now, this is pretty substantial evidence that dinosaurs lived more recently. Schweitzer, the woman who initially made this discovery, has since then found actually a lot of unfossilized dinosaur tissues. This was not an isolated event. She found, aside from blood vessels, ligaments, and collagen, The material was so well preserved that it was still soft and stretchy. If you took a pair of tweezers and stretched it on the microscope, you could let go and watch it snap back into place. And these are the remains of other things: a duck-billed dinosaur, Triceratops, and the Tyrannosaurus rex I already showed you. After breaking the bone open and dissolving it, she found even more tissues. And for the past 20 years, more and more examples have been uncovered. Here's a picture of some of the other original biomaterial found in T-Rex bones. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm fairly confident that if your meat, when buried in the dirt, will not last 65 million years. It just doesn't fit. Now, Schweitzer acknowledged this initially because she was so shocked. She said it was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone. She couldn't believe it. After all, the bones are 65 million years. How could blood cells survive that long? Based on everything we know about organic chemistry, it's not possible for such tissue to exist. But it gets worse, because 65 million years is the lowest age among the tissues. These tissues were even found in remains that were claimed to be over 100 million years old, including an example, although this example would not be of a dinosaur, but an example that was over half a billion years old. These were in tube worms. Is the story of deep time starting to sound ridiculous? I think so. Now, it gets even worse, because what we have here are preserved single cells, eukaryotic cells, that have genomes in them, which is DNA. Now, the fun thing about DNA is it is the second most unstable molecule in living things. The first one is RNA. In the human body, there are millions of breaks in your DNA every single day. And the only reason this doesn't kill us is because there are numerous finely tuned proteins that repair the DNA in our body so that it doesn't become fragmented. Now, the interesting thing about this is there were a lot of people who tried to argue that this DNA was contamination from bacteria that were inside the bone. Now, there's an issue with this because bacteria are not eukaryotic cells and they do not have proper genomes. As you can see with those little stains, all of the DNA was restricted to a very specific portion of the cell, which would not be the case if this was contamination from bacteria. Looking more closely at it, they even found the protein histone, which is what in eukaryotes, like humans and dinosaurs, is a protein that DNA wraps itself around. This molecule is not present in bacteria. So if this was contamination from bacteria, that should not exist. All of this shows is that what they found was intact dinosaur genomes. And we can once again quote some statements that she regrets making, because everyone knows that these things don't last for 65 million years. Dinosaur tissue, shocking. As the fossil dissolved, transparent vessels were left behind. Totally shocking. I didn't believe it until we had done it 17 times. This is one of my favorite examples to use when talking to people who reject the Bible, because oftentimes when I bring it up, the idea of evolution and deep time is so heavily ingrained in their head that instead of considering this discovery, they call me a liar. Isn't that just funny? Deny the facts. After we had the data, I didn't publish it for over a year. I was terrified. She knew her reputation was at stake. Okay. Hadrosaur biomaterial is another example. They isolated collagen, elastin, and laminin. This example was supposedly 80 million years old. Yet, there are even examples in dinosaur bones roughly 195 million years old. Now, here's the maximum possible lifespan of collagen, 300,000 to 900,000 years max. You know, not 65 million years or 195 million years. Under conditions dinosaurs were thought to live in, which would be tropical forests where conditions are very humid, the ground has a lot of water in it, realistically, you'd expect at best 15,000 years because this material was encased in the bone, which would provide some degree of protection. When you think about it, the laws of chemistry and biology and everything else that we know say that it should be gone. It should be degraded completely. Now, earlier I mentioned that people have a misconception about what a fossil is. When trying to explain, they said that although many analytical techniques have shown that organic material can be preserved in fossils for millions of years, how it actually happens is not well understood. Now, the subcontext for this statement is, we believe these things are millions of years old, but we have no idea how it's possible for these organic tissues to last that long. So, we're going to believe it's true anyways and try to figure out why, how that could be possible later. You know, just accept what we tell you, we'll find evidence to support it eventually. Very scientific mindset, I know. Now, as I mentioned, bones do not have to be turned into stone to be a fossil. Usually, most of the original bone is actually still present in a dinosaur fossil. This shows something that most people don't realize. The majority of dinosaur fossils really are actually just dinosaur bones, which doesn't really fit well with the idea that they're 65 million years old. Even if the T-Rex had died in a colder, drier climate, the environmental radiation would have degraded its body. Bones absorb uranium and thorium. It's an internal dose that would tear apart biomolecules. Even just being trapped in the bone would essentially destroy it given enough time because radiation destroys living tissue. Now, we have 59 documented cases of organic dinosaur biomaterial, last time I checked, and 123 cases of ancient biomaterials in total. Now, here's a list of some of the oldest examples. Now, one of the youngest examples on this list that I mentioned were the bearded worms. We have algae and bacterial organic molecules over 2.5 billion years old. If we cannot realistically believe, based off of what we know about organic chemistry, that dinosaur tissues could last 65 million years ago, then who in their right mind could think it was 2.5 billion years that these things were preserved? That leaves us with two alternative interpretations. Either the dinosaurs aren't as old as we think they are, or maybe we don't know exactly how these things get preserved. Essentially, either the dinosaurs are young, or everything we know about organic chemistry is bogus. Which one do you think she chose? Now, evolutionists themselves have acknowledged that this really doesn't work out. You see, Schweitzer was not willing to follow the logical explanation and desperately sought a way to show that these tissues could last vast ages. Mary proposed that if the tissues were exposed to a concentrated solution of hemoglobin made from the iron in red blood cells, this would preserve the tissues over large periods of time. However, her only evidence to support this was that in an artificial lab she constructed heavily concentrated solutions and preserved ostrich blood vessels for about 2 years. Now, it doesn't really follow that a dilute solution that might actually exist in the real world would do the same for over 50 million years, let alone 195 million years. Now, the important part here is that this solution, if you generate it, just kills bacteria and deactivates degradating enzymes. It doesn't get rid of the radiation or the hydrolysis, which is a term for the process of water breaking down the materials. As a result, this really doesn't slow down the process of degradation that much. It just stops bacteria from eating the tissue. So, T-Rex has DNA, bone cells, DNA can at best only last 6.8 million years, even if we were to freeze it in liquid nitrogen. There is no realistic way that anyone could get tissues to last even half the amount of time needed for the youngest of these dinosaur soft tissues to be preserved, let alone be preserved in as good a condition as they are found. So what does this lead us to conclude? Here's another example of DNA instability. At negative 5 degrees Celsius, at best you get 6.83 million years. And this is in a consistently cold environment. We know that dinosaurs, when they were buried, it was in tropical environments. There was a large amount of groundwater. And temperatures changed dramatically over this long period of time. Now, I think most of us here know that a bad way to keep your meat refrigerated and long-lasting is to repeatedly take it out of the fridge, unthaw it, and then freeze it again. The more times you do this, the worse and worse the condition the meat quickly grows. So, what this tells us is that dinosaurs are not ancient. What we have looked at is plenty of evidence showing that dinosaurs were buried under rapid catastrophic conditions, that they died not very long ago at all, and that humans saw and made art and wrote about these dinosaurs, albeit by another name. The Bible speaks about dinosaurs. There are numerous dinosaur artifacts, worldwide flood, evidence of a young Earth. Now, why is that? Because all those layers that have organic material in them that could not survive that long cannot be that old if the remains found in them can't be that old either. That means going back over 2.5 supposed years of geologic time, it all disappears and was restricted to a matter of thousands of years. All of geologic time collapses under this. This is why we can treat dinosaurs as missionary lizards. For those who are willing to hear, the case of dinosaurs provides a powerful argument against evolution and deep time. Now, why do I mention evolution? Well, if the geologic column does not show millions of years, then there's no time for evolution to happen. Unfortunately, there will always be people who put their head in the sand and will reject God and the gospel simply because they don't want it to be true. Not everyone wants to have their head in the sand, though, and this information is the kind that we should eagerly share with other people to strengthen the faith of our children, friends, family, and to show those who attack the scripture to be foolish. Romans 1:20, for his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world. The things that have been made show his power so that they are without excuse. I can say personally that it was God's fingerprints all over his creation, particularly these missionary lizards, that convinced me the Bible is absolutely true. Thank you.